Okay, we'll bring this special meeting of the CCSD to order. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show we do have a quorum present, all members present this evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to this meeting. Pleased to see a really good turnout. We decided to have this meeting at this hour because we wanted to ensure that as many concerned citizens as possible could participate. And this bodes well for our scheduling at least one other meeting this year in the evening, so that again, so we can have folks attend that perhaps might otherwise not be able to. There's one order of business this evening, and that's to hear the draft report from Mattis and Associates on the conservation program. The procedure we'll follow: we'll have the report introduced and presented. After that, we will invite public comment on the report and on the comments that were made this evening by the presenters. Then, if there's any response that staff can provide to the public comment, we'll do so. And then, following that, we'll bring it to the board for further discussion. And with that, Bob, would you like to introduce the topic?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. And thank you all for being here tonight for this meeting to discuss the water conservation plan by Madaus Water Management. We have today Lisa Madaus here, who is a partner in the firm. Just real quickly, Lisa's history includes being a technical advisor to the California Urban Water Conservation Council. She's now a board member on that council. It's a statewide well-respected water conservation council in California. So her expertise is definitely in conservation. She's also a licensed professional engineer in the state of California. So, and just to give you a very quick overview, we hired Madaus Water Management back in June of last year to look at our conservation program and to come up with recommendations on how to further it and improve upon it. And that's basically the gist of what her report is about, and you'll hear more about that. We had a workshop back in October 9th of 2012 where the community was first introduced to the process of the plan update. Again, we talked about this on the January 17th regular meeting agenda, and now we're having this workshop. Part of the process that we followed has had a lot of discussions with staff. We have a staff conservation group that we meet regularly, usually once a week. So they've been on the phone with us quite a bit in those past discussions. And more recently, we've had several good discussions or reviews by the Water Conservation Ad Hoc Committee, which consists of Director Amanda Rice and Director Gail Robinette. So I wish to thank them also for their time and efforts in getting into the details on this plan. So without further ado or delay here, I'll introduce Lisa Madaus. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Good evening. We have an overview, and hopefully when you came in, there is a copy of the PowerPoint slides that you can review along and a copy of the full plan out there for you. So we'll be giving a brief overview of the plan, talking a little bit about methodology and basics. Oh, we lost screen. Okay. It's coming. We lost our visual.
There
All right,
we go.
We're back, although we jumped ahead. So We're going to talk, and I appreciate your time this evening for your coming. I didn't realize that I'd be competing with the president this evening with the State of the Union, but we are going to talk about the state of water conservation in Cambria and your vision going forward with a new plan. So we have some introduction and background. Bob just gave you an overview. I'm going to touch on it a little bit more. We're going to talk about the methodology that we use to put together the plan that you have before you. We're going to talk about results, what we found when we did a very in-depth evaluation, and the conclusions, what the results really mean, and then recommendations for the plan that you have before you. And we are looking, I know the board is, to hear this plan, and we're looking for comments by the end of this week, by Thursday, so that we can turn around some last comments and any revisions so that the board may be looking to recommend adoption next 2 weeks. Time. So we are on our goal tonight is just to give you an overview and a real sense of it so that you could have valuable comments and later in this week. If you haven't submitted them already, and we have received some, so thank you for your advanced comments. An introduction and background, we have spent over 10 months on this planning effort, and we had a lot of data and information that was provided to us. You know, we come in as the experts, but we always tailor what is actually national methodology to your local experience here, how you use water and what your conservation opportunities are. We started with reviewing with what those opportunities are. We call them conservation measures or different activities, and we reviewed those on October 9th with you with the whole workshop. We got a lot of input, and that's really the list that we use. You can think of it as an a la carte menu of conservation activities that we go through, and then we spend time evaluating and modeling them. How much water might these conservation activities save, and how much might they cost to do them? And then we brought those findings back in January. And so if you attended that presentation or reviewed it online or the handouts, then you would have seen some preliminary results. So we took feedback. We've slightly updated it, and that's what you will see tonight. And there's been a lot of publicity, and obviously you've had the opportunity here, and we'll look forward to your comments on the draft report. Brief introduction to our methodology, what we did. We looked at the methodology that we use is really a water balance methodology. So we look at water production, we look at water loss. This is a pressurized system. They all leak. All pressurized water systems leak. We looked at water loss and any opportunities there. We had interviews with staff. We've had a lot of phone calls and with staff and the Water Ad Hoc Committee input. We looked at trends and technology. We stay up to date on all the water conservation technologies that are out there, from toilets to clothes washers to irrigation controllers to water loss technology. We do a lot of specialized savings evaluations and studies that are unique to different conservation devices, too. So we do planning, but we also work with technologies and are hands-on. We looked at historical use in the community and what the demands have been. And we also looked and project forward to what the long-term use would be and conservation opportunities. We looked at the 22 recommended measures I just mentioned. That was the list that you saw in October. We did our careful math, and we look at cost effectiveness. So is the cost and savings worth the cost that you're going to spend to do the program? Do you have enough conservation measures to meet the CCSD, the goals? For the community goals, and we analyze different programs. So once we analyze these individual conservation measures, we package them together in different programs, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. And then before you now, you have the completion of our draft work, which is the written report. Just to highlight, the picture in the corner is the Water Conservation Programs, a planning manual. The American Water Works Association is a national organization of 13,000 water utilities, and they put out these peer-reviewed best practice of manuals. And my father, Bill, who you've seen maybe at previous workshops and is also key to this project, and myself co-wrote that national manual. So you're very lucky that we got the call and had the opportunity to work on this project. And just so you know, we are kind of helped write the book. In fact, Bill did it back in the 70s and has been doing planning for his 30 years of his career. We look very carefully at avoided costs. What's the benefit? We take an engineering approach. We look at the avoided costs of doing conservation compared to what's feasible to implement for success and the availability of technology. And we want to get to a really cost-effective and manageable conservation program. And my expertise and unique view that I bring is because I've also run conservation programs. So I understand what it takes for the staff to really put these programs together or to outsource and make these conservation programs happen in the community. We used our most sophisticated tool to do this conservation analysis. It's called the Decision Support System Model. Bill Madaus and his Australian colleague put this model together in 1999 originally. We continually update the methodology. It's endorsed by the California Urban Water Conservation Council. It is the most robust evaluation tool we have in the industry. And it takes information and input, so just briefly, it takes population and future connections and different end uses and breaks down how people use water. And then it also takes in savings data, like if there's hot water being used, like for shower heads or clothes washers, what's the hot water that would be saved? And it looks at also operational costs. What's if you didn't pump an acre-foot of groundwater, what's that worth? And we feed that information into the model. And we also look at these conservation measures. There's things, BMPs, called Best Management Practices for the California Urban Water Conservation Council. There's 14 of them. There was 14, there's now 5. And different fixtures, different appliances, water loss and pricing. These, we do a water balance. We do a top-down, very careful accounting of how everyone uses water, production, water loss, single-family accounts, how single-family accounts use water indoors and outdoors. And then we do a bottom-up look. How many people use water? How many people are flushing toilets in the community? And we make sure, we call it right-sizing the buckets, that we're not going to add up a bunch of conservation measures that can save more water than it's really is feasible or reasonable. So we do very careful accounting. And it's all done in a big Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. It's like 70 worksheets. We've worked with staff. They've looked at it. They understand what the model does and have validated our assumptions. The key thing that we want out is to look at conservation measures. How much do they save? Each one on the menu. So you'll see these in the plan, and we'll get to that point. I'll show you a menu coming up. And then we package these measures together like a menu. If you did, you know, 5 and 9 and 13 and 15, how much water would that save, and how much would that cost? And then this is just jumping ahead on me a little bit, but Program A was the menu of measures that the CCSD is currently doing. So we look at how much is that going to, you know, save and cost. Then we look at Program B. If we optimized and they did a little bit longer list or more expanded some of the conservation measures that they were doing but want to do a little bit more aggressively, what would that take? And so we added a couple of new measures, and that measure C, Program C, is all the measures we evaluated. So there was 22. So we kind of benchmark what is CCSD doing now, what's all they could be doing with the 22, and then the Program B is where we kind of optimize and look at what's reasonable and feasible to do in terms of goals for water savings, goals for cost, the ability of the staff to implement this, the willingness of the community to participate. A lot of these measures are voluntary. So for the results, and I will say on the program and measures and the analysis we did, we were very careful. A lot of the data we got from the staff, we were asking a lot of questions about past activities to make sure we were not overcounting anything. It's called saturation, and another word is market penetration, is how many people have already replaced toilets, how many people have already replaced clothes washers, what's the new plumbing code, how many might they replace in the future. So we have participated or done some of the studies that evaluate these, and we looked very closely at these savings for your community. You've already done a lot, and you should be proud of that. And so we're very careful to have just a narrow margin of what we think is left in the community's potential for conservation. We were conservative with that. So the results of what we saw were accounts and demands mainly are residential in your community. Not surprising. You have more than 63% of your demand is in the single-family sector. We have non-revenue water has gone down. It was higher. You replaced all the meters in your community. It's been running about 8%. And we also, just so you know, most of your use is indoor. There's a slight edit on this third bullet. It should say 77% of the demand for single-family residential is indoor use. That is ended up in the wrong spot. Sorry about that. But when we reread that bullet, wasn't quite clear. But so majority of your demand is residential. Majority of your demand is indoor residential use. So when you see the list in the menus, there's a lot of questions. I think we're holding questions to the end, or
can we hold the questions till after the presentation, please?
Okay. Goes to predominantly indoor uses, and 23% is outdoor uses. That's been reviewed in January, so I'm not going to belabor going over these details. The measures in the program. So this is the program B. I was talking about kind of that goal and the optimum. This is your menu from the 22 measures that we evaluated. These are the ones that we are recommending carry forward in your plan. We really look to balance the plan across both residential measures and commercial measures, and that there's general measures that would be community-wide or system-wide. So the general measures on the left are things like public information, water loss control programs, using your automatic meter reader system to find leaking accounts and notify the customers. There's a continuously running meter. Maybe you have a leak. Looking at updating your conservation pricing and water waste practices. That's a standard ordinance. All these right here are on the left-hand side, foundational BMPs. They call them for the California Urban Water Conservation Council. They are considered to be core, and that every utility should do these. The residential measures and the commercial measures are flexible in terms of picking and choosing what is appropriate and you want to do for the community. So we have toilet rebates are ongoing now, and we have a small continuation of the conservation toilet program for the next 2 years. Closed washer rebates, water efficiency surveys, that's when people volunteer to come and have someone come to your home and give you advice, either inside or outside, on saving water, showerhead giveaway, fixture replacement by a deadline, irrigation upgrades, that's multifamily and commercial, and then the hot water recirculation pumps incentives. So those are all the residential measures that would be implemented. And this plan is really kind of phased in and different activity levels by different years. It's in the details of the plan between now and 2020. So this plan is a multi-year plan. Conservation measures for the commercial sector are large meters, commercial rebate, closed washer rebates. Again, the surveys going out to commercial establishments, doing walkthroughs. Already some of the staff have talked to many of the commercial customers and advised them of this program and looked for opportunities in conservation. Urinal rebates, again, the fixture replacement by the deadline, and the irrigation and landscape upgrades. So that's the suite of conservation measures that you should flag that slide and know that that's the menu that we're advising and have recommended in the report. The outcome is the roll-up of the savings from those conservation measures look like this. Starting with 733 acre-feet, water demands, if you did nothing and there was no plumbing code savings, no natural replacement, water demands with the North Area Development Plan and the growth of 1% rate would go up over time. So this is assumed from 2012 to 2020. And then no more change. The plumbing code is the green line, so those are natural savings. You go, your toilet breaks, it's older, inefficient, you get a new one, it's more efficient. but you don't take advantage of a rebate or any way that the CCSD would have an active participation with you in the plan, is what we account for in passive savings. Program A is what the existing conservation program for CCSD is anticipated to save, estimated. Program B meets its goals. Its additional conservation measures are expanding what they're doing now. And Program C was all the 22 measures together, what the goals would be for conservation savings. For a summary of results, this right here, this is the 2020, and Program B is on the order of 70 acre feet per year. So that's cumulative savings over the time. You do different activities. Over time, you add up in a cumulative conservation savings. So in 2020, you'd be on the order of 70 acre feet per year. These are, and we always advocate that you track and monitor these conservation programs as you go along. So this is really a living document. This is a menu. You track participation levels. You account for savings that are happening and estimating. You're watching customer demands and usage and understanding the trends that are happening in the community. Estimate of the total cost for till 2020 from 2012, so 8 years, is on the order of $3 million to save on the order of 100 acre feet cumulative. That includes the plumbing savings and the 70 acre feet of the conservation program. In conclusion, we analyzed the three programs. Program B, so you will see all three programs fully evaluated in the report. The plan for recommended adoption on the 28th, and then the CCSD, once it's adopted, would be looking to move into an implementation phase. So it would be annual budgeting, annual work plans, kind of they move into the next level. There is a presentation to the Countywide Water Resources Advisory Committee, and there's just be continually working to update and fund the conservation plan, encourage the community to participate, offer already additional incentives and rebates, and contract assistance. Some of this may be more staffing support, maybe outsourced, and there's just the goal to have municipal code revisions, if that's, how that's appropriate, would also be kind of in the future. So with that, I'm going to conclude, let you know there's been an amazing amount of work. There has been a lot of phone calls and staff support and late nights to bring. It seems like months have gone on, but we've been very busy in the background doing a lot of analysis to put this plan together. And you have a quality list of recommended programs. We are happy for any additional feedback. Our whole goal is that you have a very sustainable and implementable plan that you will trust and be able to implement successfully. So with that, I believe we have additional questions, comments, and I'll turn that. My comments.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. At this time, we're going to open it up for public comment. If I could ask members of the public who wish to comment to speak from the podium here, so we'll be able to get your remarks.
We have a mic.
Oh, you have? Okay, so I didn't think we had a guy on roller skates tonight, but there we go. Okay. Yeah, Lisa, if you could then stay there. If there's some questions that you could respond to, that'd be great.
President Thompson, may I just say one thing? Bob, can you share with the board and the community who we have extended an invitation to through the WebEx process, and hopefully they are part of this workshop. They may not physically be here, but they have access to what we're doing, and we think that's important. They're key stakeholders, but they're also key government agencies and people that. Need to be in tune with what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Can you hear me okay? Is this on? Yeah, I'm not sure if they've actually logged on. We sent about 7 invitations out. We have a feature now with the help of AGP Video where we can connect people remotely. They can use their computer or conference phone to communicate with us directly to the meeting from a remote location. So we invited 2 senior staff members with the Coastal Commission if they could attend, and I didn't get confirmation from them. So if there is anyone logged on right now, if you want to state your name. Again, I haven't had a chance to really see if anyone actually took us up on the invitation to this point, but we have... I thought I heard something.
Yeah, Daryl Robinson, I'm here, and I'm wondering how I can log questions in.
Yes, thank you, Daryl. We will have some testimony shortly, so that'll be fine. I'll defer to our board president, Michael Thompson, to see if you want to... let me first get through this list of invitees here, Daryl, and then maybe we can get back to him next, okay, if that's acceptable. We invited, I think it was Tom Luster and Daniel Robinson of the Coastal Commission, who had some discussions with us in the past related somewhat to conservation and other topics as well. We've had invitations sent to three at the county, including Supervisor Bruce Gibson, as well as James Caruso, who was a senior planner on the RAC committee, as well as Courtney Howard of the RAC committee, and she's in County Public Works. Again, I don't know what these people's schedules were, but they did at least get invitations. And as you just heard, Daryl Robinson of Unlock, we knew he was remotely located down in Southern California, so we went ahead and sent him an invitation as well, because he does represent quite a few of the lot owners in Cambria. So with that said, as long as those who are logged on, it sounds like, Daryl, you may be the only one logged on right now. We ask that you keep your phone on, just use the handset and not the speakerphone feature when you're not speaking. Otherwise, you'll be heard throughout the whole building here, because we have you on our overhead speakers here. So would you like to take the first question?
Why don't we hear from Mr. Robinson, as long as he's on the line, then
okay,
we'll move.
Go ahead, Daryl.
Can I defer for a few minutes? I'm not quite ready. Just come back to me whenever it's convenient.
Will do. Okay. I thought I saw some hands out here, and I'll just run around with the microphone.
Okay. Go for it.
Hi, Crosby Swartz, Cambria. I just have a question.
Point. You make an investment up front, and these conservation programs continue to save. And you also continue to have replacements in the community due to plumbing codes and things. So you would consider, even though CCSD may stop actively doing a program, that savings could continue to go on because you've had, you know, an active investment, and particularly the plumbing code savings you see are the ones that are dipping down, and that's really what's influencing the out years.
That would be zero growth
rate. Right, but natural replacement of fixtures and appliances in the community still, because there's all kinds of codes that are still coming online. The state level, Cal Green building codes and other things all, you know, are ongoing. There's plumbing fixture codes, so even with zero building, you would still have changes in the community ongoing. So the green is going down, and that's influencing the other conservation programs going down.
I just want to add, if you could state your name when you're making your comment or question. If you're making comment, if you keep it to 3 minutes or less, and then if you're asking a question, obviously.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Thompson. My name is Jesse Arnold. I was here in 1976 when we had a severe drought, and it was really hard on the community. And we know from history there have been droughts throughout history. So this program is fine for saving water when we have it, but when you have a drought, you don't have any water to save. So that's why I take the position, fine, saving water is fine, but I don't want to use that saving to bring in more people, because it will just mean more people suffering when the next severe drought hits. Then you had a figure up there of $300,000 to save 70 acre feet of water, if I saw that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So check my math, but I come out with about $4,000 per acre feet to save those acre feet. So that's a whole lot of money if my math is correct, so you can check me on that. Let's see. Oh, there was one other thing here on page 4. results, what we saw, the number two bullet point, it says non-revenue water percentage reduced to less than 8%. Does non-revenue water mean the water that leaks so we can't charge someone? Thank you.
Do you want to handle some of that?
Sure, whatever part you... Yes. Which part first? I had three parts. The drought, the cost, and the non-revenue water.
Okay.
Definition.
I'll jump in if you need help.
Okay. You are correct in that this program is an everyday conservation use and savings. This is not a drought management or water shortage contingency plan. So that's the reliability of system is a different question, I guess, than what's been addressed with this plan, but it's still a viable consideration, and that's when we look at conservation savings over time and years going forward, how much water is reasonably used and how much could be reasonably saved in times of drought would be directly connected to your reliability. This is kind of, I guess, not included, but has been considered with the conservation measures that we're taking into account here. So there is, if you will, a demand hardening effect that's occurring, but that's accounted for in the Urban Water Management Plan, the Water Shortage Contingency Plan, and other planning analyses. So I'd have to connect with Bob on those other details. I don't know if you want to expand on that.
Yeah, a little bit about the funding, too, that we're looking at. You know, for any new connection to occur in Cambria per the... can you hear me now? Okay, sorry. For any new connection to occur in Cambria, we have to do an equal demand offset program. So currently, we have a points bank in our code, in our district code. So there's so many points that every new development has to achieve in conservation. So people can either do the conservation or they can buy points from the program. And basically the way that works is it helps fund the conservation program. We have, for example, I recall one house not too long ago, it was about a $15,000 fee for the demand offset points.
Irrespective of cost. So for Cambria, that's, you know, a 5% goal on your gallons per capita per day. Other utilities have 20% or more goals. It just we have moved away from requiring cost effectiveness. So we used to just rank things, you know, biggest bang for the buck. We still do that. So that's the cost effectiveness of the things that we've done is we have given attention to cost effectiveness in your plan. We have looked for those conservation measures that save the most water for the least cost. So that's embedded within the $300,000 is kind of an optimization that we were looking at to try and find those measures that they are costly, but they would save the most water for the least cost. So it's still a criteria that we review measures with. And the other question on non-revenue water is the difference between production and consumption. So it is, that's the classical definition of anything you're not collecting revenue on. That's losses to the system. Be they not measured with the meters because they're under registering, but we think that's actually a small component because your meters are relatively new, having just been replaced in 04 and 05 and 06. It would be more on the real losses side. And actually, you have fairly reasonable losses. I'm working with one small system right now, has 25% losses in their system. They happen to be in a more saline environment in the Delta and have a lot of losses. So this is common to see non-revenue water, you know, several percentages. This Cambria is actually really reasonable compared to other systems I've seen.
My name is Janine Jacobs. If we're at the point of perhaps creating mandates for new development, does your plan incorporate gray water architecture, say from the washer to the toilet, shower to the toilet, water collection on rooftops. I think new water from rain on the rooftop is the biggest, greatest way to achieve a water revenue. Thank you.
Want me to answer that? I can.
Yeah, I can just cover quick points. I'm really interested in gray water, but I don't think the technology is quite there yet for some of the internal uses. I've been tracking some systems that came out of Australia, for example, during their drought. I do think in the future you'll probably see more future homes plumbed to where you might have a system where, say, you have two sewer systems, one for gray water use and one for black water that would go to the sanitary sewer, so you could pick it up and treat it and then pipe it back into the house for flushing toilets. The state of the art in the industry isn't quite there yet. I mean, there is some fairly simple gray water systems where people are using them for irrigating a garden area. There are some requirements in the state that there has to be subterranean. You can't spray the water above ground. There's still some limits on it, and we have such small amount of outdoor water use that I question whether it's really going to be that useful in reducing water. It'll knock it down some, but I think the industry has to come along a little bit for as far as treating gray water to a higher standard so you could use it inside the house again, in Cambria's case, because we have such a high percentage of indoor water use here compared to outdoor water use. I'm not sure I remember all the rest of the question.
Rainwater and gray water.
And, you know, we have had requirements for cisterns in the past, and the problem is with the Mediterranean climate we have here, where unlike where a lot of cisterns and rain barrels are popular, like in the Caribbean and maybe eastern areas where you have rainfall throughout the year, is that they just have a tendency to run dry right in the middle of summer. So unless you make a really substantial investment in cisterns, they just don't pencil out that well. That's been our experience. So, is that?
Yeah, I just like to add that this conservation program does seek to be innovative. We are focused in the costs that would come from CCSD in terms of utility costs and direct customer community costs to implement these lists of conservation measures. There's one critical one that is, I feel, the glue to any conservation program, and that's public information. And there will be, if I had my druthers, a lot of links on the CCSD's website to information about things like the state's gray water standards and San Francisco's Gray Water Guide, or other information tools where voluntarily customers could pick up some of these ideas that are being done in different communities. So that's, we kind of bring an encyclopedia, Bill and I do, in our head of who's doing what and where, and the education tools to kind of help bring the community along for anyone that wants to voluntarily fund themselves to go ahead and do those conservation measures, but the cost wouldn't pencil out to pay CCSD funds to do that.
Hi, I'm Tom Beal. With these conservation measures, you have conservation and the water use goes down. With water use going down, that lowers income. So if you have a senior citizen doing what they can, they're living in a small mm-hmm. house, mm-hmm. they can't afford higher bills, if use doesn't go down on them, but yet it's spread district-wide, what happens to those that can't do anymore, or only those that are saving water by reducing their bill going to win? The other thing is the enforcement of those conservation measures. If one went from a 5-gallon toilet down to a 1-gallon toilet and didn't like that toilet, 2 years later reverts back to the 5 because they like the flush better, is there any enforcement that is applied?
Uh, That's a really good set of questions. You know, I think the it's like Lisa mentioned earlier, the state is requiring a reduction of at least 5%. We're saying with this program, we'll probably get it to 10%. They've, in my mind, in my opinion, they've kind of ignored the cost implications of a 5% reduction in revenue. So we got to get smarter how we conduct the business, be more efficient. But that is an issue, particularly if you have a stagnant community that's not growing. We are not getting new connections. And that's one of the benefits I see, where if you do offset future connections with conservation, you're slowly building your customer base up a little bit to help stabilize the rate concern some. As far as the enforcement of conservation measures, we have a couple of mechanisms in our code right now, but they don't always catch things. If people are remodeling, replacing, a toilet and just doing it on their own, we may not catch it. But if it's a sale of a home, for example, we require retrofit on resale. So what we'll do is we'll send our inspector out. He'll do a pre-inspection on the house. If it's not up to standards, the current standards in our code, they'll have to modify it by the close of escrow or shortly thereafter, and then we'll do a post-inspection to make sure those measures are actually installed. So that's happening now. That's been going on for probably a couple decades in Cambria. It's just we're tightening that system up as we work as staff, as a team of staff here. So we have that in our code. There's also on any remodels, if you're doing a certain type of remodel that might include another plumbing fixture, for example, the entire home has to be brought up to the current standard, not just the new construction, so you're adding one bathroom to a house. We'll inspect the entire house and make sure the entire house is brought up to the current standard. So that's a requirement for a building permit, for example. And there's other mechanisms I might be forgetting about right now off the top of my head here, but those are the basic ones that we have. And definitely any new home construction is going to have to meet current standards, the most rigid current standards. So those are the basic on enforcement.
And financial side?
Sorry?
The financial side?
Financial side, I mean, I would say as far as the cost of the program or the... Right, I tried to cover that a little bit in my earlier comment, but basically, we are going to have to operate as efficiently as possible as you conserve. I remember being at one workshop with Department of Water Resources. I brought your same question up to them, and I said, you know, this is fine to conserve, but we lose 5% revenue. How do you make up that 5% revenue? They didn't really have an answer for me, okay? They just said, well, you've got to conserve. It's a statewide mandate that you conserve by 2020, and you have to follow the criteria in the state code. And that's what, you know, for Cambria, the minimum reduction by 2020 is 5%. So it is a concern that I think all agencies are facing right now, is as you conserve more, you have less revenue, and how do you make up for that lost revenue? And I don't have an answer for you on that.
Well, there is. We did account for variable costs. So when you don't pump water, you don't pay to produce that water. So there is a cost savings. So that's when we say avoided costs, that's what we mean. And we did assume that, you know, if you save an acre foot, that's 70 acre feet in 2020 that you're not pumping, that you're saving the cost. And the other question about enforcement, I did want to bring up, you know, the 5 gallons per toilet. One thing that... we look at too is the state is passing standards statewide for what is for sale in California. So, for example, 1.28 gallon per toilet flushes are only available after 2014. So the state, like, naturally, these passive savings we talk about, they're trying to save for the whole state on the water system and the wastewater system when it's an indoor fixture or accounting measure. So that's like community wide, statewide. So this is not unique to CCSD, and these are state goals. So you can't go buy a 5 gallon toilet anymore or 3 gallon, and now it's 1.6 and it's going to 1.28. So that's where, and then in 2017, there's a statewide retrofit on resale, where it's been 25 years since we had the 1992 plumbing standards come into effect for the 1.6 gallon per flush toilet. So they feel like those toilets, we have the concept of useful life. How long do they live? So after 25 years, it feels like those toilets should pretty well be changed out. So that's, you know, they kind of have these methods, and to, in that case, retrofit our reef cell statewide to see that we capture those last older toilets and that every community can save.
Alan McKinnon, excuse me. The difference between B at 300K and then we look at that number A, do you have a price as for that? The reason I say that is needs versus desires. If there was no dollar consideration, of course, we'd go for C. But as I look at your graph, and A would give you the necessary requirement in 2020 of 5% if, in fact, you slightly reduce your growth rate, that 1% growth rate. So if we're talking dollars and how to get to that as a goal versus simply the objective of more conservation is better and we go for the gold, that's another story. But do you have the roll-up on A versus B, the cost for A versus B?
I don't have specific quote. It's on the order of 220-ish, but I'd have to open up the model and look exactly like what the cost would be in 2012 for to give you that exact answer. I don't have it in the slides or in the plan. We were really talking about the budget for
finally,
program B in the plan.
In your roll-up of costs, are you including staff as well as rebates and so on and so on and so on?
Yes, these are
everything.
Administration, education,
excellent.
Brochures, website. You know, we have and in addition to any reimbursement, like a rebate or incentive, it's included in the cost of the program. It's fully loaded.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is John Terwilliger. I've got a couple of questions. At what point does the past engineering of all of our POTWs begin to affect or be affected by conservation water use? In other words, all of the current plumbing runs, the POTW systems are all designed to work with X amount of water flow. If we, out of hand, discount all those engineered facilities, and we find that, my goodness, we have all sorts of plumbing issues because we're getting solid waste material not flowing to the POTW, at what point do we run into that? I mean, we can keep reducing water use, but at some point, you're going to flush your toilet. It's not going to go anywhere. Okay, that's number one. Number two, I see that only Program B, well, both Program B and Program C meet the goal of the 5% water reduction by 2020. But both Program B and Program C have this wonderful euphemistic phrase called water conservation pricing. And I'm guessing that that doesn't mean good things for the residents of Cambria. And I would like to know a little bit more about that. And then... Actually, that's it for now. Thank you.
Sure. So your first question about reducing the fixtures and the indoor use, there's actually, it's in the plan itself, figure, we talk about indoor gallons per capita per se. It's about... 10 gallons per capita per day. That's the indoor savings. It's in Section 8. Experience by utilities, my own and others, and they've done drain line studies. They do these, they call them drain line carry studies. They're really fun and exciting using soybean paste and other things that are not a good after-dinner conversation, but this is well studied, and the experience has shown that the SAC regional lifted that requirement after their experience. Individual properties, if they are older pipes and you are reducing the flow, you've got mature trees, they love that water source.
So there is incidents. It's not necessarily the drain line that's the problem or even the slope. It's the fact that it's been, you know, perforated by roots. Those roots then grow up when you lower the flow. So that is more often than not the consideration that comes up with that property. Again, this is a voluntary, you know, program, and the national, you know, the state plumbing codes kind of are dictating that the standards are going down anyway. So that's kind of our standard experience with doing these drain line carry and plumbing standards. We have really seen wastewater treatment plants across the country have really flatlined in terms of their generation of wastewater because of these plumbing codes. They're saving millions across the country, billions, because of these plumbing codes and not having massive uprisings because of changing out plumbing fixtures and the on-property sewer issues. So I guess that's my best answer.
We're talking about, yes, 80% decrease in the amount of water being used to flush toilets in every single home in California at some point as those toilets get changed out.
The housing stock, yes.
Yes.
We look at housing stock.
That's huge. I mean, I don't know how many plumbers you talk to, but I talk to a lot of them.
Yeah.
And they're having problems right now everywhere. So it's happening. People are just choosing to ignore it.
Yeah, so we, you know, our goal is to put the best product out there. We do a lot of product testing. That's another thing that comes out. There is WaterSense labeled products. There's consumer reports. There's a lot of kind of consumer information, and that's back to that public information about what's the best product out there. So federal and state standards will tell you, like, here's a minimum, but that doesn't mean that the manufacturers are putting out good product. So there's good and bad, and sometimes the bad ones are like in all those popular colors, and so they get out there, and it's negative on oppression among plumbers and other things. So we really try and promote. There's actually Green Plumbers USA. They do a lot of work with accrediting plumbers with water efficiency, greenhouse gas savings, kind of this customer care to try and get customers the best product so that they can have a good, you know, water experience in their home. So not the power showers, you know, the panel showers, unfortunately, but, yeah, we want to see other good water experiences in the home. So that's our goal, is through the public information program especially, to get really good information about good products out there so that you have reliable savings and a good experience.
I think you had another question.
And then the other question about conservation pricing. So we were asked, you know, what would be reasonable, what are other utilities doing about conservation pricing? We looked at your current pricing structure. It is, I would say, maybe not on par with some of what we're seeing with other communities where they have equity. You have equity where it is, you use more and you should pay more, right? Do the same thing at gas pump. Same thing with minutes on your cell phone bill, same thing with everything else. So the goal with the rates is everyone pays into the system, and equity, people should pay in, you know, their fair share. So we did look at if there was some very minuscule, modest changes in the conservation pricing, what might be reasonable based on standard studies for changes and reduced responses, motivation by the community to save water. So that was asked for, and we did attempt to give a first answer to that question. It is a very initial first answer. There is a rate study that's looking to be done next year and or the following year, so I would advocate that you participate in that process and make sure you learn who uses how much is reasonable to pay, you know, what does it look like. So I can pepper you with all kinds of information and, you know, what other communities have grappled with how to pay for their water and their water system. But we can look at your water rates and see that the tiers are pretty low and large. So you don't have much incentive in your current rate structure to, if you're lower income, you still pay the same increment for up to 6 units. That's not a lot of incentive for someone that has low income really trying to save. They don't really get to save very much on their water bill. So that's something that we recognized and we commented on.
Peter Chaldeca, could you explain the
cost? 175 was what I recall the dollars per acre foot.
Is that the cost of delivering an acre foot right now?
Yes, producing your local groundwater supply, pumping and delivering and... Other questions, comments?
Okay.
Daryl, I'm ready with my question if you're ready for me.
Jump to Daryl then. Or just, okay, go ahead, Daryl.
Okay, pardon me. In the report, figure 3-3 shows outdoor use annually, I believe that is, at 23%. But figure 3-1 shows spikes every dry season that range anywhere between 36 and 70%. My suggestion is that it's only the dry season that really matters because there's excess water running out to the ocean during the wet season. And if you look at it that way, I think the savings from irrigation reductions would be more valuable than what's indicated in your report. So I would ask you to take another look at that, just from the dry season only perspective. The other part of my question is, in section 7.2, you give two different perspectives for considering the cost and the value of the conservation. I would ask that you also consider the perspective of the waiting customers that have been subjected to the moratorium.
Okay, thank you. I think it's understood. Also, Daryl, just so you understand, I did print out your email you had sent, I think, maybe the week before this one, and provided a copy of that to the board for the record, for the administrative record here. So that's part of what we have in front of us, where you did talk about the outdoor water use, maybe not exactly the same way you just explained it, which I think was pretty clear to us on this end. But we have noted your comments, and thank you.
Well, I might add there was a previous report done several years ago by a previous regime, if you will, of CCSD. I believe the report was done by Boyle Engineering, and it might have been in the late 70s or so. And it was at least partly, or the objective of the report was partly the same as what we're talking about tonight. And the outdoor water use was one of the major things that they looked at because they were just looking at the dry season spikes, which happens to be, you know, the time when it's not raining, you're running out of water. And the very time of the year when you have the least water is when you're using the most.
So we do... thank you for your comments, Joel. We do compare... It's actually the average to the peak... that you see, like in figure 3.4. And we do account for outdoor savings in a number of the conservation measures. So there's, a number of them, including all the surveys for single family, multifamily, and commercial, all have a strong landscape water conservation savings component. They're looking to save like on the order of 5 or 10% depending on the measure and their usage, outdoor savings. Also, the leakage. So when you find like the AMR benefits conservation measure, maybe finding leaking valves in the irrigation system or maybe finding leaking toilets, not sure. Those are the two usually guilty culprits on those meter benefits. Also, there's irrigation upgrades and the opportunity to do a lot of it, opportunities for education. There is the new technology you probably heard of, smart timers. In the new CalGreen code, there's a requirement to put in smart irrigation controllers. Those are the ones that adjust the climate. So if it's raining out, they skip a day of watering or a couple days, whatever is appropriate. They have rain sensors in them that have a solenoid valve that interrupts their watering. They also do a dialing back. So they have historical climate or getting a climate read, and they know when to water, how much, and they adjust it. We My sister's also in the business. My father, myself, we're all like individual testing labs. We all have different ones in our houses that we're trying out. So this is an emerging technology, but we did not include it in the plan in terms of incentive dollars that CCSD would give out right now. But it doesn't mean it couldn't be considered in the future or wouldn't certainly be information that would be given out to the community to encourage those that want to be early adopters and try that technology to try it out.
Well, I am familiar with the green code, Cal Green rather, and the latest in irrigation technologies. So one of the things, and I am familiar with how much water they save. They're really fantastic. But I don't know what is, if anything, is going to be require, or is going to require them to be.
I don't think this gentleman's answer about what happens with the drought situation has been answered. I also have a couple of questions. You're showing your chart up here, including a 1% growth rate from 2012 to 2020. So I'm assuming you're talking about planning on issuing letters of intent so that new people can build. And I certainly understand there are a lot of people who've been waiting a long time. But my understanding is part of the reason for the water moratorium is the fire department's concerned that with the water situation the way it is, that if there's a serious fire in here, there's not enough water storage to be able to fight fire coming through these trees. Also, my understanding was that we wouldn't be issuing permits for new building until there was a permanent new water source found. It looks to me like our new water source is all of the water all of us have been trying to save for years and years. And I'm concerned that even though we're all retrofitting everything and doing as little watering out in the yard as we can, that may be enough water to get a few houses going now. But if we have a serious drought, what's going to happen to everybody? You know, this is going to reduce all the water for everybody if we have a drought situation and we have more people here using water. So, you know, pretty much it.
Thank you. I think, you know, again, we're looking at the use of conservation as a way to offset any future connections. So, as you see, the chart showing actual amount of water being pumped is actually going to go down. But we still need to keep efforts going forward for reliability, be that a brackish desalination or use of Whale Rock Reservoir or use some surface storage north of San Simeon Creek Road. So we have that active long-term project with the Army Corps that we're continuing to make efforts on. In this model, we used 1% growth rate to see what would occur because 1% was the last growth rate allowed for Cambria as far as the county's growth management ordinance and what the Board of Supervisors had set prior to the 2001 moratorium declaration, just to see what it looked like. And we stopped the any connections at around the year 2020, thinking there would be some kind of a project online by that time. But it was to look at how can you allow a limited number of connections, use demand to offset, and what would it look like as far as using that program. But we still want to continue to move forward with a project to improve long-term reliability.
I can add, too. I want to point out that right here, the starting point where all those dots start together is 733 acre feet, right? And that's the average of 06, 07, and 08. So those were drought years. They had some restrictions going on. So that is a real number, if you will. And all the programs, even with added connections, with implementation of these conservation programs, are still below what you experienced, the 733 acre feet. So we are holding to the reliability in the system. So the orange line, the red, the purple, all below that 733. And this, you know, the points and the credit system, everything is validated, inspected, you know, watched closely and monitored to make sure that, you know, this is a realistic curve as you go forward, and that as new connections are coming online, that this reliability is being maintained. So that's how I look at this curve when I see it, is that I see, okay, you're going to be below where you were. Even with your existing orange conservation program, what the CCSD is doing now would be better off in increasing reliability to the system. That's a good news story. So even with adding new connections, you would be still maintaining that.
Yeah, I think you had also a part of your questions on fire protection. I didn't want to miss that. I can't write notes as I'm running around with this. I sometimes think of these after the fact. But the fire protection, the improvements the district has made in the last 10 years was the Pine Knolls tank was a big project, getting those built with more storage. We had the east-west connector pipeline that actually goes through the West Ranch from Lodge Hill over to Park Hill to improve the fire flows in that area. Currently, our next two big projects are replacing the Rodeo Grounds pump station, which is, you know, off of Rodeo Grounds Road where the old water yard's at right now. That'll have some fire pumps in that. We're doing the design of that, as well as a third tank up at the Stewart Street tank site in Lodge Hill. So with that,
I'm just curious, what are we doing to store the water when it rains, all that wash that washes into the ocean? Especially in the last 4 years, we had a couple of really good winters where the water just flowed like a river into the ocean.
As far as our long-term planning goes, we're looking at two possible alternatives with the Army Corps of Engineers. One is to use the Whale Rock Reservoir for surface storage. That involved taking the wintertime flows and pumping that to Whale Rock for storage, and then pulling that water out in the summer when we need it the most. And another alternative is actually build some surface storage somewhere north of San Simeon Creek Road on property and some ranch property up there. We have one rancher in particular who's already approach the district in the past and see if we can put any seasonal storage of a similar nature to what the Whale Rock concept is and take some of the high flow period and just store it and then bring it back. It's not an inexpensive proposition. The third alternative we're looking at is the brackish water alternative to treat the underflow near the San Simeon Creek, but that doesn't require the same storage volume. So we're looking at the cost and the benefits of each of those alternatives right now with the Army Corps as far as a long-term planning system.
At this point, there's no storage
that runs out right now? No, the only storage we have is what you'd call distribution system storage, and that's not for a long-term supply, like where you'd have a large reservoir and you'd store up water. Sometimes these reservoirs store up several years. It's not uncommon to have 3 or 4 years stored up in a reservoir, and it's a fairly significant storage as opposed to like a tank system, for example. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah.
I'll come back then.
You were saying the water demand was figured at 2006, but prior to 2006, let's say go back to 2003 or 2004, when the economy was good, the motels and restaurants were doing 80-90% occupancy, the vacation rentals were running full from June through September. Now we're getting maybe a month and a half. If we do get back to those good days, even with conservation, I don't know how they're going to be able to afford the increase in fees plus meet the demand that may be here.
Well, we looked at several alternatives on this and came to settle on the 2006, 7, and 8 average. We could have gone back in a further timeline, as you're implying. I think the part of the decision-making process was we thought those 3 years would have been reasonable. The district had replaced its meters in, I think, the 2005-2006 time frame, so there was some improvements after that, so we tried to just average those years, and we also felt that the subsequent years of 2008-2009 might have been, or 2009-2000 may have been too low to include in that average, so it was a bit of a compromise. And I don't know, Lisa, if you want to add anything further to that, but that's my recollection of that particular point.
Yeah, we did look at the whole historic record going back to 2001, and we're looking to optimize, you know, where was the reasonable window to pick, you know, as a starting point, and we did feel that 06, 07, 08 was the right starting point. We looked at occupancy rates that do show up in the census, in the 2010 census especially, and some of those numbers were a little bit surprising to me. Your vacancy rates, at least on the multifamily and a lot of the housing units, were not as low as we expected. So that we did look at occupancy. We did also look at the trends on the commercial sector. We've also had a lot of conservation changes and upgrades in those properties too. So it's a mixed message in the signal a little bit, but when we looked at it, felt that 06, 07, 08 was your best optimum window to pick for the starting place. So there's, we also, you know, you look at trends after droughts, after economies, everything. No one rebounds all the way back to 100% of what they were before. We see that across the state when we look at this. We look at long-range trends. So that's, we used... this is our starting point in our basis, our planning. This brought up in that we talked about that in the October workshop, so we kind of talked about that up front.
Changed when we didn't get access to do the soil borings out on the San Simeon Creek Beach area. So we've moved further inland on the district property where we know there's some mixture of seawater that's migrated inward inland along with some freshwater mix, we're calling brackish water. So now we're looking at treating that and desalinating that water as opposed to straight ocean water, which would have been in a subterranean well underneath the seafloor. So we just weren't able to investigate and get access to that area to define that approach adequately enough. So those are the three alternatives that the Army Corps is focusing on. As that report process completes itself, eventually a preferred alternative will boil out of that, and that'll be recognized in the report, and that'll be brought forward to the community. So, How long will it take? Well, we've been telling people the spring of this year, so I will need to update you on that in future reports to the board and keep everyone posted on it.
I know that commercial usage is about 11%, you say, but there's a whole gully on the west side of Highway 1 in back of the Moonstone Hotels, and I think there is. And if we could use the Highway 1 runoff into a gully capture system and have a refining unit just for those hotels, I think that would be something to look at, you know, because then it could be used for the summertime, you know, usage, and it would be a good investment for this town, I think.
Thank you.
Oh. I'm Jim Adams, the Water Department Supervisor, and that's a really good point. And there are three motels, I believe at least three, down there along Moonstone Beach that harness that water and use it for outside irrigation. They volunteered and did it themselves. So, but it's a good point. I'm not absolutely sure, and they've changed ownership over the last year. So there's quite a spring that comes down there out of the Lemert region, and they've collected that water. They put it in the cisterns and irrigate outside.
Thank you.
Hi, Bill Stradley. I just had a question. What about
as far as storage for the fire department, as far as using seawater, is that as far as the fire department, is that an impossibility?
Well, I'm really stretching my memory on this. I know it was discussed in concept many years ago, maybe in 2000, 2001. And I know the fire department was a little reluctant to want to get involved with seawater back then because of corrosion and concerns with their pumps and equipment. I know there's some communities that do have that. I think the city of San Francisco, I understand, has quite an elaborate system where you can use seawater if necessary to fight fires. We touched on it, and then we kind of said, no, it just doesn't seem to be feasible at this point. So
it just seems like it's
free. Right. I understand.
Those fire trucks are up to $1 million apiece, I hear now, so they're expensive equipment.
They're expensive.
They probably don't
want to. Fire chief's not here. I'm sure he'd have a lot to say about putting seawater in his trucks, but
you get it recycled water too, yeah. Potable, non potable.
Right.
So I'm not sure smarter people have thought about this than me.
I know if the weather conditions are right and they have helicopters with the buckets on them, they can dip them into the ocean, but the conditions have to be just right, you know, to even do that in a wildfire event. But I know it's mm-hmm. been done in the past.
Yeah, I'd like to thank John. Were you going to?
Oh, I'm just going to state that we can't get access to the ocean. So.
Yeah, I had that in the back of my mind, John. We've been trying to get access to desalinate ocean water and kind of ran into a snafu on that as far as just getting a soil boring done to see how to design a well that wouldn't impact marine life and pull seawater. So it's not a simple task to actually get water out of the ocean in this area.
Okay, I'd like to thank everyone for your comments. We'll ask staff to consider everything that was said prior to finalizing the report. We will be bringing the discussion back to the board, although no action will be taken tonight. Let's see. Oh, also, I guess we will still be accepting written comments until Thursday. So if you have something that you'd like to provide for the record or for staff to consider, please.
Been a lot of input that we also have given. You've given some good ideas and input tonight. So I do believe that as we look to tomorrow with Cambria, our next step in a conservation program, our next step in a conservation plan will be available to our community. We will have good ideas. They will benefit, I believe, us in the future as a community in trying to have a balance. I think balance is always an important thing to remember. So that's my only comments right now.
Hey, Director Rice.
Just a few comments. I also am very glad that we had this in the evening time, and I'm glad to see the turnout. Thank you for coming. What I view this conservation program as is, it might be better titled, for me, being an English major, a program for efficiency and reduction of waste of water as opposed to conserving, because most of the measures that are included in here are about efficiency and technology and not taking shorter showers, for example. Things like making sure we're not watering our streets instead of our lawns. That's prohibiting waste as opposed to cutting back on what your actual use is of the water. And so that's kind of the way I view it is. This is also conservation, this conservation program, efficiency program, whatever you want to technically call it, is one of the three things that we've chosen in terms of how we get our water. One is an alternate water source, which may or may not be seawater desal or brackish, whatever the Army Corps is working on. And one is our current aquifers that we are using, and one is conservation. So we need to have a program and a plan for how we're going to make that part of our water resource is managing it better. The challenges I see ahead, three main ones. The first one is the most important. We have to prioritize these measures and which ones we're going to do first, because there are a lot of them, and it's going to take a lot of energy of the community and the staff to take care of that. We also have a huge challenge in tracking our costs and savings, because I tell you what, I do not want to fund a program that is not saving water, that we can't document that we're actually doing what the plan says we're going to do. I also think that it's really important that we don't forget there are a lot of people in this town who are renters. There are a lot of people who own property that don't live here. They're landlords. And how do we incentivize those people to make sure that those homes get retrofitted? Because I tell you what, as a renter myself, I can't even get one of the shower heads unless I get permission from my landlord. So, and the landlord has to sign something, and she's not always easy to get a hold of unless I haven't paid my rent. Oh, that's how I'll do it. Considerations, and then I'll just wrap with this. Considerations, in addition to some of the wonderful comments they heard tonight, I'd like to make sure we're targeting rebates at those who wouldn't otherwise retrofit. If I'm changing out my toilet anyway, why am I paying that person to change their toilet out anyway? We want to make sure that we're spending our money wisely. We should maybe consider seasonal rates, meaning in the summertime, if you whatever amount you go above in the summertime, that 23% that's over, let's make that really, really more expensive. So if people do want to water, they can. They're willing to pay the extra money, but it creates more of an incentive. I'd like to see more inclusion of the gray water and rainwater collection, like Janine was saying, and I think that this district needs to lead by example, which means that smart water use needs to be happening with all the district's use of water, including the fire department, including at the water and the wastewater treatment plant and all the other internal accounts that we have in this community. I appreciate everybody coming and listening. Thanks.
Director Berger?
I would just like to thank the ad hoc committee for doing so much work and Medeas for doing the excellent job that they've done. It's a fantastic job. And yes, it is just a conservation program. We have very large issues as far as having a reliable water source, and I think that that's a focus that we should still keep our eyes on. The world is changing, and we need to make sure that we have an adequate water supply for our people. I wasn't a big cistern fan, but Janine mentioned something today, and even Medeas responded, saying that we don't have rain all year, but we only need water, especially for outside use, only during the summer. So maybe the revisit of a cistern program is reasonable. You know, you do some calculations, you actually can't get that much water off of a roof. But if you save it and you just use it for a 6 or 8 week period in the summer, it might make some sense. So for summer outdoor water use, that might make some sense. And again, thank you for the ad hoc committee. I think it did a great job.
It would bring down usage slightly. So if we do something, and if we can do something and add additional population and bring the thing down even farther, I see that as a very good position, because what we have, what we may have, is more people sharing the same amount of water, and that pricing may go the opposite direction than having fewer people paying for more type of thing. Now, I think there's something else involved here that we have to keep separate. There's a couple things we have to keep separate. One is this 2020 saying that we have to go down to about 105 gallons per person per day. If we did not reduce our water usage at all, but just stayed equal up through 2020 and added 500 people, when you divide the same amount of water by a bigger number, the 109 gallons a day we use now become 101 gallons per day. So you can meet those goals. You can meet those goals one of two ways: either reduce your amount of water, or add to the divisor in your formula. The next thing I think that we have alluded to here and talked about it, and some of the other directors have talked about, is the difference between conservation, and I love the word efficiency. I think it's too late to change it, but I wish that might have been a good thing as a water efficiency program. I'm getting old, folks. the difference between that is something we should be doing because it makes sense, and we can take advantage of it to do as a temporary to keep maybe our water usage the same so that our revenue stays the same. And that's different from having the reliability issue of what's going on with the Army Corps of Engineers for water storage and those things. Those, they are different, but they are both things we should do. And quite frankly, I think we ought to have an intermediate step in between of some form of recycling water. One of the solutions to the concept of not having enough water go through the system is to let it go through the system, clean it up, and reuse it. I have a motorhome, and it has a gray water and a black water tank, so it can be done. You can separate it right at your own home. It's easy to clean the gray water tank. It's not so easy to clean the black water tank, and so I know what you're talking about there. But at the same time, maybe you let the system work, and we do some commitment to recycle water through what we can clean up fairly efficiency at our local station. In fact, tomorrow afternoon, San Simeon is holding a open house of their new system. They are setting up recycle of 80 acre feet a year, I think it is, that they can be using for all of their irrigation to the hotels and motels and things like that up there. So it can be done, and it can be done fairly efficiently. So I think everything is going in the right direction. I think the efficiency program will be a great initial start. We can monitor it each year. We can see whether we're saving any money. We can see whether we're saving any water. Are we getting the benefit from the money we put into it? And we can then also work on the overall reliability problem, whether it's through combination of recycle some form of storage or brackish water pumping. Anyhow, I'm after 4.5 years on the board, I'm excited.
Are there any other comments from other members?
I'd just like to make one final. If you're paying 9 units of water, you're using at your household, not per person, at your household, you're using between about 100 and 120 gallons per day. If you're using 6 units, you're probably using somewhere between 72 and 78 gallons per day for your household. That's not per person. And the numbers we're talking here are per person, per capita. So you got more than one person in your house and you're using 6 units. I give you a big pat on the back and you're probably doing a great job because you're not using a whole lot of water. That also means there's not a lot of leeway.
Just that, a fair sense of caution and yet optimism that we do have opportunities that will make a difference. And I certainly appreciate what the consultant did with their graphs, and we worked a lot on that and gave a lot of input on that, as Lisa knows, I'm sure. But when I look at the graphs, it's interesting here, too, because every time we have conversation like this, I think we're all better informed. And that's part of the key, I think, awareness and being better informed. When I first started on this, the more I worked on this with the graphs, we have several different kinds of water, like thresholds for use community-wide. And I looked at the graph, and the one that is by far the most conservative is to look at acre-foot and think that we would want to try to stay at 810 or below. That is a highly conservative threshold. We have permits that actually allow for more, depending on conditions. But I do see what this community is doing right now, looking to help other people retrofit and finding ways to pay for that, to conserve, to be more efficient, is going to be something that people can live with, that are not going to feel like, wow, you know, I've been saving water, and now for all that that I... And the sad part of conserving water and saving it is, where is it? It's nowhere. I mean, we haven't stored it. So, you know, that's going to be another really important step. So I just wanted to... That's it.
I thank you. And let me say that I think we all expect that CCSD will lead the way on this particular effort. We have public buildings that we're responsible for, including this building, public restrooms, and I would hope that that we have our ducks in a row here for conservation before we require everyone else in the community to pitch in. I'm sure Mr. Gruber will take the lead on that. I thank everybody for being here tonight. Again, I'm very encouraged by this turnout, and as Director Rice indicated, that we would probably want to do this again, not necessarily for one subject, but for having a regular CCSD meeting so that we can get more of our community to participate. And I thank you. And with that...
I think you're great. You look like you've had a lot of fun here tonight.
With that, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.